This is the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the show for real estate investors, stock traders, and business owners. We help you keep more of what you earn and protect what you've built. Let's get started.
Hey, welcome everyone. Hi, it's Clint Kuhns here with Anderson Business Advisors, and I've got a really great podcast in store for us today. I am bringing on two of one of my favorite clients. They're physicians. I've been working with them for many years, and I've just watched their real estate investing explode. And not only the real estate investing side, but the business. And what they've taken from this is they've developed the mindset. They figured out what it takes to actually go out there and start investing in real estate, looking at all the options and getting past many of those barriers that many people face. Now, they are physicians and they typically speak to physicians, but the concepts of what they're teaching, really, they speak to everyone. So if you're just started in real estate, you're wondering how you get started in real estate, I think these are two of the experts when it comes to thinking about the mindset and understanding those challenges and how to move past them. They have a brand new book that they just released, and we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about it. We're going to teach you how you can get a hold of it. So we're going to bring on Kenji and Letty of Semi-Retired MD. Hey guys, thanks for joining me.
Hey Clint, we're so excited to be here with you today.
Thanks. You know, so why don't we start off? Where are you guys at right now?
So we are in Puerto Rico. We moved here a couple of years ago and really have the beautiful winter kind of sun here. It's really an incredible place to be. And the 4% tax doesn't...
Yeah, we don't see the snow.
All right. So that just goes to what we're going to be talking about is that, you know, you've really figured it out that, you know, you can invest in real estate, but there's so many other angles to it on how you can maximize your profit and then how to reduce your taxes. And you're those people that... you hear about all the time, they're saying, hey, we're just picking up. We're moving to Costa Rica. We're going to lower our taxes down to 4%. And a lot of people like to do that, but they don't know how to get there. So I'm hoping we can get into some of that today and you can explain what that's like for someone who's considering that. But before we move into that, Life on Your Terms, you just released it. What inspired you to write the book?
Yeah, so Kenji and I are both physicians, as you alluded to. And when we started this journey ourselves, it was all about creating this other source of income that would free us from having to work in medicine and getting to work in medicine by choice. And over the years, we've run across a lot of physicians, but also high income earners who feel stuck in their jobs and don't really see the path of how to get out. And what we wanted to do was show in a really easy to consume kind of, we wrote it as a fable, actually. So it's a fable of two couples and one couple works and then also does real estate investing on the side. And the other couple gets stuck in this cycle that I think a lot of us do as high income earners, where they're buying the fancy houses, they're buying the things, they're stocking away money in the stock market, but they're in their retirement accounts, but it's not money they can actually use. And so they spend their whole life trading their time for money and working. And so we wanted to show people how they could actually use real estate investing in a very tangible, easy to read format, and they could just see the pathway. And so we actually wrote this across multiple years of following these two couples. And you see the couple that invests in real estate and goes through a lot of the challenges that we see in real estate and how they deal with it in their mindset. And I think it just wanted to provide a very clear path of how to do it for people who are looking to do it themselves.
Yeah, and that's really evident when you read the book about those challenges, because a lot of people face those, and it's about getting past those barriers and how you're able to do that. And I saw that come through a lot. And, you know, when you brought up about having the two different couples and their experience, you know, you leaned a little bit on the rich dad cash flow quadrant model inside of there. Mm-hmm. And you talk about this, but you do it in a different way that I think that other book that I've read in the past, it just didn't really seem to resonate with me because it didn't have those journeys the way you've described it from a fable standpoint. And I really like that back and forth to really show people, you know, when you're out there and you're starting off, you know, trading time for money, you know, how, long term, the impact, what that's going to be like for you, and then making that shift. And the hardest thing about it, of course, is always the fear, right? To do something that you haven't done before, to get out of your comfort zone and realize there's a better way, just like the two of you have done with your careers and your investing. So you mentioned that you're both physicians. Do you practice anymore?
So we don't actually. Since 2020, we have not practiced in the hospital, but we still feel like we're serving in a really beautiful way with helping others be able to create this source of income and enjoy medicine again.
Yeah, but the thing that you can draw inspiration from is, you know, you spent all this time, you made a major investment to become a doctor. And then you walked away from it, so to speak, to realize that, hey, that wasn't the best decision for us. What do you think? Where do you think you would be today if you had the information in your book 12 or 15 years ago? Do you think you would have been a doctor?
Oh, yeah, I think I would have. You know, I actually, and Kenji can speak for himself, but I don't regret it at all. I loved being a doctor. And actually, our intention was never to leave medicine. Our intention was to create this other source of income and work in medicine on our terms, which is what we did for many years. We actually achieved financial freedom after 3 years and stayed working in medicine, although Kenji cut back for real estate professional status, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit. The reason that I ultimately decided to leave medicine, which was a tough decision, was because semi-retired MD, our horse business, had grown so large that I had 6 employees. It was during COVID and I was pregnant. And this was before vaccines. So I was going to work financially free, knew I didn't have to be there, was pregnant, was treating COVID patients. We were both hospitalists. And then I was in the middle of things trying to deal with 6 employees. And I just, I realized this was not what we had signed up for. Something had to go. And so it ultimately came down to what was more fulfilling for me. And that was actually serving our people at semi-retired.
Yeah, and I agree. I've always viewed real estate as something that you can do on the side. It was never meant to replace medicine. We were always intending to continue to practice and invest in real estate. The beauty of real estate is it allows you to do it, earn money a lot more efficiently because you're able to reduce your taxes. You can keep more of what you earn, and that makes it you can build your wealth a lot faster that way. And so, yeah, as Leyte said, really the thing that led us to really leave was because we had this other thing where
a business
that we had to run with all these employees and all these people depending on us. And then also we also had a greater mission and we could actually touch many more lives. We can actually have a greater impact through this business. And that's what we really wanted. I mean, we love taking care of patients, but we also had this broader mission of helping our colleagues, helping other high income earners who are burnt out, who are suffering, who are looking for another way to earn income so they can ultimately live life on their own terms.
Well, so that goes to the mindset. And so in the book, you do talk about mindset and the importance of that. So can you share with us, you know, how changing your mindset was, you know, pivotal in your success and where you are today?
Yeah. So mindset is one of these things where I think when people hear the word, they go, oh, you know, that's, you know, just show me the strategies or just show me what I need to do. Right. But what they don't realize is that with anything new is going to generate fear. Anytime you do something like real estate, and it doesn't have to be real estate, it could be business, whatever it is, you're going to encounter some challenges. You're going to encounter some curveballs. And when that happens, then you realize, wait a second, that mindset is so critical to kind of keep you going because a lot of people in those situations want to quit. And so if you are going to be successful, you can't reach a point where you feel like where you are actually going to quit. You have to keep going. And we teach our kids this all the time. You know, they encounter things. They're learning every day, right? They're encountering new things every day. And there are many times when they just want to quit. And so we have to encourage them. And we have to also remind ourselves that when we're in that situation, like our kids are, that we need to keep going.
Yeah, it's absolutely the most important thing in our real estate success has been our mindsets. There were so many challenges we've had with, you know, sellers coming last minute to the table and saying, hey, I'm not going to sell this property. Or we had actually house hacked and had a squatter in there, which we included in the book. So many challenges that could have made us quit that we just kept going because we had such a vision of where we were going, what we were building for our family and our future, such a strong why. And so we didn't get derailed because we could turn around those failures or those challenges as opportunities to grow.
So when you're thinking about real estate and put in that context, what are some of those challenges that you find, as you talk about in the book, that people typically run into and how do they have to work through those? Because if you're getting started, it's a whole nother area, right? You know how to do what you do as a physician, but somebody tells you, hey, you need to start investing in real estate because it can produce passive income. You can live in Puerto Rico. You can live the life you want. Like, well, how do you know? this seems so complicated. And how do you get past that or those challenges?
I think the one challenge we see people get very hooked up in the beginning is choosing a market. That is one of the most challenging for people, especially people who are starting to wrap their minds around investing out of state. Because a lot of our community does invest out of state. A lot of our community lives in like California and New York, and they're deciding to invest in multifamily that potentially are thousands of miles away. And they're choosing a market where maybe they've used to live, or maybe they visited once, or maybe they have family, and they're just freaked out because they don't feel like they know enough about that market. And so there's a lot of fear that comes up with market choice, for example, among many things. So for people who have bought their first property, they're going to be fearful about running a rehab remotely, right? That'll be another one. But really the key is having example. Well, starts with believing you can do it. Okay. And oftentimes that comes from having examples of people who have successfully done it around you. When we first started out, we didn't know any doctors investing in real estate, but now there's so many people who from our community who are doctors, high income earners doing this. And so if you can just see one example of what's possible for somebody else, that's when people start to realize, you know what, I can do this too. And start to move beyond analysis paralysis, which is where a lot of people get stuck, to making decisions. So ultimately, decisions are what move you forward. And if you don't make a decision, you're not going to be able to actually build a portfolio. You have to make decisions along the way.
You know, correct. And what I sense from, you know, we talked about the Atlanta purchase in the book. What I got from that was that the characters had built a team. And this comes through that you need to have a team around you to help support you going forwards. And so could you speak to, you know, the team concept of what you started looking for and what the challenges you faced when you started your investing?
Yeah, when it comes to the team, that is really the key to getting over some of that fear of investing remotely or, let's say, overseeing a rehab, like Leyte said, from long distance. It's the relationships that you build with them. And I think what happens is that people, when we can say team all day long, but at the end of the day, they don't realize that if you have a really good quality relationship, like you can build some amazing relationships with team members. And we have some of the team members that we have are people that we're actually really close to. And when you develop that type of trusting relationship, then it's very easy to see that you can actually rely on them, right? You can count on them to show up. You can count on them to not steal your money, right? These are some of the fears that are going through people's heads. But as you start to go through the process of building the team, you start to realize, okay, I can build these relationships too. I can build these trusting relationships. When you're just talking the theoretical and you just say, build your team, people aren't thinking through or even seeing that they can actually build these types of trusting relationships.
Yeah. And I just want to add for the newer investors who are listening to this podcast, one of the things that we didn't get initially, but we now definitely make part of our course and what we do in our community is have people build their entire team before they start putting in offers. Because there's nothing like getting an offer under contract and then being able to have the inspector there, the property manager there, the contractor there, the agent there, and being able to ask the property manager, you know, what am I actually going to be able to rent this for? You know, the contractor's there giving you a bid and you say to the property manager, you know, if I make these changes that the contractor's saying I should make, like how much am I going to be able to rent it for then? And then you have your agent there thinking about what would I be able to sell this property for down the road if I make these changes and I increase rents. And having those whole team there, you triangulate the data because you have multiple opinions. And I think what new investors think is they're on their own, but it's not the case. You actually have a whole team around you and you can get multiple opinions. And what we often tell people in our community when they're not sure, like let's say they have one team member saying one thing and one team member saying another thing, and they're not sure which is the right answer, and they've gone and looked at the data themselves, they can get another person to weigh in. And then they have multiple data points and then they get that certainty, because what you're lacking as a new investor is certainty, but you have the ability to be able to get that with a combination of your team and then, of course, understanding how to run the numbers yourself.
Okay. So what you're talking about there is that team approach. But in the book, you know, it was Jay and Maya, I believe, were the ones. They ran into that issue where they find a property, but you talk about this term about hidden equity or hidden value. And so even if your team members, maybe they're not up on it, they might be down on it, or they don't see it the same way you do. So I think that's, if you could expand upon that, because, you know, I've worked with team members before in my own investing, and sometimes they just don't see the hidden potential. So how do you talk about that aspect of it, of finding the hidden potential and that hidden cash flow or that hidden value? And then how do you train yourself to recognize that?
Yeah, so that I think is really one of the keys to success. And when people are looking at, let's say, Redfin listings, what we get all the time is they say, I can't find any deals. And what we typically say is, well, a big part of it is you're not seeing that hidden value. You're not seeing that hidden opportunity. And a lot of it is, turns out to be pattern recognition. You're recognizing patterns of opportunity that other people are missing. So for example, there may be a garage that you could actually take part of the garage and maybe add a bathroom to it, right? It doesn't work for every garage, but there are certain homes that are developed in a certain way where there's maybe extra room in the back of the garage where you can actually build a bathroom and the plumbing is all there. And so that's an example of something that on the surface, you're not going to see it, right? But when you start to recognize these types of patterns, then you will then be able to spot this hidden value. And again, it's hidden because it's not obvious to the person who is just casually looking or somebody who is not trained to look for it.
Yeah. And Clint, you're saying what happens when you disagree with your team members. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you very early on, we read a book on, and it had a section on how to rent garages separate from the unit. And it had this whole formula. We're like, oh, we're doing this. And we found our first property was a duplex that we bought together with a separate garage down in Auburn, Washington, and had this separate detached garage. And we're like, okay, so we're going to take the door off. We're going to put this roll down. We're going to close up all the windows. We did the whole thing of the book and we're like, okay, we're going to rent it, property manager. And they're like, no, nobody rents garages.
Yeah, we have a lease agreement.
We're like, no, we're renting this garage. We found a lease agreement. We like ran separate electrical. We're like, the book says we can do it. So we're going to do it. And we rented it for $250 a month. That was huge. And it added so much value to that property. That was a property we bought for like $174,000 or something. We sold for $416,000, I want to say, a couple years, like maybe 4 years later. And part of that was the garage itself and that extra income. So as an investor, you have to trust yourself sometimes. Sometimes your team members will have different opinions, but you can go try things. We were just talking to one of our students who ended up pricing a unit $300 more than their property manager was telling them that they should, and they rented it. And what we had said to them, well, if you put it out there and there's no interest, you can always adjust a week or two from now, right? So sometimes you got to trust yourself and just try things, and you can always adjust. Failures are just learning opportunities. And if you see it that way, you're going to get better with time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I remember when I started investing down in Vegas in a certain area, we started buying properties. I wasn't sure what we could get for rent. So that was hampering our ability to purchase because we wanted them to cash flow at a certain rate. So I'd throw up ads on Craigslist and I would take a property. I'd say, this is available for rent for $1,800 and see how many calls I got on it. I didn't own it yet. I said, oh, it's not available yet. And then I'd hang up like, oh, there's plenty of interest here. Yeah, we want to invest in this area. And so I would agree with you is that, you know, what we were being told was completely opposite. If I followed their advice, I wouldn't have bought those properties because the people that we were working with in that market didn't think that we could get the rents we wanted from them. So in order to gain that experience, though, you talked about reading a book. So are there, you know, your book's phenomenal, and I would encourage everyone, we'll have a link to get this book. It's on Amazon. But that aside, what are some of those areas in which someone would be exploring if they want to look for more value and to appraise things from a different mindset?
Gosh, I don't know that there are many books that we've ever read that have talked about hidden value and that creativity. And I must say, we've seen so many forms of hidden value. I think there's the typical stuff that people think about, like adding an extra bedroom, or if you have a large multifamily, you know, charging for parking. But we've seen some wild stuff. For example, We recently had a student who bought a short-term rental, and it was listed for sale as a 4-bedroom, and it was on septic, and it was actually 6 bedrooms, but it could only be approved and listed for 4 because that's what the septic was approved for. Well, during due diligence, they went and looked into the cost of connecting to the city sewer, and they could actually do that, and then it would make it a 6-bedroom. Right. And so that's already forced appreciation that you would just never imagine. We have another student who noticed that that oftentimes real estate agents would leave the mother-in-law unit off of the listing and not count the bedrooms and bathrooms. So he started looking in his community for 4-bedroom, 2-3-bathroom units with a mother-in-law in the written section. So you'd actually Google it. And when he found that pattern, he was actually able to make them into 4-bedroom, 2-bath on both sides. So he was able to force a ton of appreciation. And then he was able to add a different tenant type. So he found like a oil and gas corporate company that wanted to rent for their tenants. And then all of a sudden his cash on cash was like over 30%. Right. So there are so many different ways to force appreciation, not only by changing the building, but also by getting different tenant types. You can bring in so much more cash flow. So I don't know that I've ever seen a book that contains all that, although we definitely try to include a lot of those patterns in our book.
Yeah. And then also, I think, yeah, you're right. I haven't really seen a lot of sources of it. And that's why I think we do put a lot of those examples in our course. And also we have an annual virtual summit that we do where we highlight stories of students who have gone out and done some amazing things. A lot of it is centered around identifying that hidden value and tapping into it. I mean, that's why we chose the stories, because we learn every time we interview somebody, we learn about all these new patterns that other people can then tap into.
Yeah, and it just accelerates the entire process for somebody when they have that type of community and those types of coaches, like what you provide, to help them go from 0 to 50 rather than just inching along slowly. Because at the end of the day, I mean, people become dispirited if they don't see that progress quickly enough. And you need people around you to keep pushing you, to keep giving you that confidence. I think you do a phenomenal job, because I work with a lot of your clients at doing that and helping them understand what real estate can provide to them and their families, which is why one of the interesting things I read in the book is that you talk about cash flow, but you also say you evaluate things based upon tax savings. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the tax saving side to investing that, you know, quite frankly, I've said this before, on the short-term rental stuff, Kenji, you were ahead of us here at Anderson on harvesting the benefits from short-term rentals. And I remember the phone call that you and I had, and I was like, damn, I never thought of it that way before. And I started looking into him. I was like, he's right. He is 100%. We'd actually missed out on that aspect. And I went and we had a meeting with all the attorneys, and I started repeating what you were talking about. And they're looking at me going, I don't know if you can do that. It's like, you can do it. And so that's something I think is you've always been a leader in people who people talk about real estate investing, the individuals out there. So you bring it up in your book. Could you explain to the listeners right now what you're referring to when you're talking about using tax strategies in evaluating real estate?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the benefits of real estate, and I actually learned this from my dad, who was investing for many years. And I grew up with real estate. And so he was buying for the tax advantages. And then there were some changes to the laws where they introduced something called real estate professional status. But just to kind of back up, the idea here is that you can use real estate to lower the taxes that you pay on your income. If you have a W-2, if you have 1099, maybe you're getting a K-1 from a partnership, you can actually lower the taxes you pay, and sometimes even down to zero, which is what we ended up doing. We paid zero income taxes for 7 years. We lived in Washington at the time, so we were paying zero federal and zero state. And when you do that, you know, taxes are your single biggest expense of your lifetime. And so if you can eliminate that, you can grow your wealth so much faster. And not only that, if you then recycle that money back into real estate, which is what we did, because, you know, again, we looked at real estate as something that we did on the side. We still had our doctor jobs for many years until 2020. And so we continued to work. And so we lived on what we earned from our work. But what we did was, with the tax savings, when we got that huge tax refund back, we would reinvest that back into real estate and help us grow our portfolio even faster. So that's how you incorporate the taxes, is that we think about, what we're looking at is, okay, how much are we making in W-2 this year? Okay, we want to shelter that. So how much in real estate do we need to buy, whether long-term rentals or short-term rentals? It can be a combination. And then let's go out and buy enough real estate to shelter our income. Then we know that we'll have that amount to put back into our real estate portfolio. And that's how you can really grow your portfolio very, very quickly.
Yeah, I just want to add, you know, tax savings are just one of the ways that mm-hmm. real estate makes you money. You've mentioned cash flow, but there are a number of other ways. I would say most of our wealth has been built through forced appreciation, which is increasing the value of those properties, you know, by tapping into that hidden value that we were talking about. But then the renters are paying down your mortgage. Then you have the opportunity for immediate appreciation, where you buy a good deal and you make money on day one, whether you got an off-market deal or you negotiated or whatever. So there are actually six ways you can make money with real estate investing. I didn't mention market appreciation. So when you add all those together, that's what makes you grow and be able to get to financial freedom so quickly. I mentioned we did it in 3 years. It was because we were tapping all six of those, including the tax savings, which was allowing us to not pay income taxes.
Okay. So one of the things, though, that you touched on, but I read in your book about evaluating a deal. So in bringing taxes to the deal, you talked about, all right, you could buy this house for, say, $300,000, I think it was, or you could take that same money and buy a house for $1.2 million, and you use the tax code then to put a ton of money back in your pocket just from savings. And so that's a mindset issue right there, how people look at things. They get scared and they don't see that $1.2 million, it may cost you more, but what is it going to do for you on the tax side? So could you touch on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think specifically, let's just talk about short-term rentals, because that's mm-hmm. a really great one that a lot of people buy single-family homes for. So with short-term rentals, there's this ability to, in one calendar year, take one property, let's say a $1.2 million property, and do 100 hours and more than anyone else with that property. And that allows you now to take the losses that you generate on that short-term rental and shelter W-2 income. And you get losses through depreciation. So basically, the government is seeing the property as losing value every year, and they allow you right now, and they just brought back, 100% bonus depreciation, right? So you take that 100% bonus depreciation, you shift those first 20 years of depreciation into year one, and it can generate this huge loss that then shelters a lot of your W-2 income. And then, because we're so interested in forcing appreciation, a lot of times we're rehabbing, then we're able to write off a lot of that as well as a loss in shelter W-2 income. And so buying a $1.2 million property, if you're just guesstimating that you're going to maybe take 20% of that purchase price and be able to shelter W-2 income just from the depreciation alone, not accounting all the furniture you're going to buy for the short-term rental and any rehab you're going to do, it adds up. And even one property like $1.2 million can shelter your whole W-2 income for the year. And then if you have extra losses, you just bring it forward and shelter future W-2 income. And so that's how we were able to do this for 7 years, is continue to shelter all our W-2 income using those types of loopholes.
And one spouse can continue to work full time, so you can then shelter, take those losses against your spouse's income.
Yep.
So there's a lot that can build on with this strategy. And the other thing that I think is important that you mentioned is that savings, right? That becomes your down payment for your next property.
That's right.
Right then and there, just by using the tax code. So the other aspect of this, and Kenji, I heard you touched on it, but you bring up the term lazy equity. And maybe if you could explain to people, what is your strategy around what lazy equity is and how they should be looking at a property to harvest that and grow their portfolio?
Yeah, so lazy equity is the equity you have in your property. And that tends to grow over time because, for a number of reasons. One is, you might get immediate appreciation. So let's say you negotiate a discount on day one, so you get the property for less than the market value, right? Another way would be that the renters are paying down your mortgage. And then the third way is with forced appreciation. So, you know, let's say you buy a property for $300,000 and you're able to force the value of that property to go up to, let's say, $350,000. So,
and market appreciation.
Yeah. And then market appreciation as well. So yeah, really. So what you're doing is you're taking the value of the property that you either force or maybe you get market appreciation. And then you're looking at, okay, how much of a loan do I have to pay back on it? And then the difference is your equity. And so what happens over time is you might initially start out with a 75% LTV, loan to value. So according, you know, the value is let's say, $200,000 and you have a loan for 75% of that. So your equity is only 25%, right? And so over time, as you increase the value, you force appreciation or you get market appreciation, then the equity starts to build. As the renters are paying down your mortgage, the equity starts to build. And so that equity that you have built up is called lazy equity, and you can tap into that equity. If you just let it sit and do nothing, then it's called lazy because it's not working as hard as it could for you. But if you pull that money out and put it into another property, then you have that money working really hard for you because that money is then generating a return. And so that's what we mean by lazy equity. And, you know, you want to always be looking at that lazy equity and see, okay, you know, should I tap into it and get it working for me?
Yeah. And the ways to tap into it are cash out refinance or 1031 exchange. And we have over 150 doors now. We didn't do that because we had all this cash sitting around that we could make for down payments. It's because we bought these properties, we forced appreciation, and then we utilized that lazy equity and the tax savings to be able to buy more properties and to be able to roll smaller properties into larger and larger ones over time.
And you're also using those other strategies as well about building the value. So you're creating more income so you can qualify for larger loans and more loans as well. And so there's so many little nuances that you layer upon layer inside of the book that if you're not up on it, when you're reading it, it's going to start to sink in. And one of the things that I noticed in there, a few times you reference the concept of fast FIRE. And, you know, that's about financial independence. And I know your website discusses it, but for people who haven't been to your site yet, how would you say fast FIRE differentiates from traditional financial independence, retire early strategies that other people talk about?
Mm. When we decided to invest in real estate, for us, it was getting to financial freedom as fast as possible. We didn't want to be achieving financial freedom when we were 65 and we could retire like most people do. We wanted to do it. Actually, our goal was 7 years. And as I mentioned, we did it in 3 years. And so for us, fast FIRE is financial freedom while you're young enough to enjoy it, right? While you still have kids who you want to spend time with, while you still want to be able to travel and have your health and are able to have those freedoms. It doesn't necessarily mean you quit your job, but it allows you to work on your job in your job on your terms. So if it's a toxic work environment, you know, you can leave it because you don't need the money anymore. You're working there by choice. And I think most of the people in our community and probably most of the people learning here and listening here are really, our work feeds our purpose, right? And we enjoy it. Or if this work doesn't feed our purpose, if we have financial freedom, we're still going to go contribute in a very meaningful way because there's only so long you can sit on a beach. So for us, fast FIRE is not about necessarily retiring. That's part of what we are about is semi-retirement, which is being able to do, you know, what you want when you want it. And that fast FIRE is doing it while you're young, not having to wait until you're 65.
Yeah. And it's really that combination of strategies, making sure that you max out all those different ways to make money with real estate, right?
Well, 6 ways.
Yeah. And we literally in this episode, we touched on all the different ways. We talked about that hidden value. And if you can get really good at it, you can force a lot of appreciation. And that's what Leyte said is one of the ways that we built our wealth so quickly. And then 1031 exchanging is another aspect of that where, you know, you take that lazy equity and you put it into bigger properties. When you put it into bigger properties, then you can create bigger tax losses because you have bigger depreciation numbers, right? So that also helps, right? You can create these massive tax losses, shelter your income. And so it's really just about maximizing all those different ways of making money with real estate. And that's how you can really boost those returns and create that wealth so quickly.
And like you stated, you know, about having kids and being able to do things you want and enjoy them. You mentioned before we got started here that you're heading off to Disneyland tomorrow. And so what provides the ability to do that is that you have financial freedom. And for the people that are listening in, I'd highly encourage you, pick up a copy of the book, Life on Your Terms. We're going to put a link in the show notes so you can go there. Just click on it, take you right to the page so you can order it. Phenomenal read. You also have a number of resources available for people on your website. Could you just describe to the listener right now about your site and why they should go there?
Yeah, so we run Semi-Retired MD, and what we're really focused on is helping high-income earners and doctors be able to achieve financial freedom. But we really are into providing actionable data and useful information that people can take and actually apply. We are not about fluff. And so we have a blog, we have a podcast called Doctors Building Wealth. And what we give in that is useful things that you can use no matter where you are in your real estate journey, whether or not you're just considering real estate all the way through owning a portfolio, you're going to find something very useful that you can apply in your own portfolio. And then if you're interested, we have Zero to Freedom, which is our course that takes you from knowing nothing about real estate all the way through building a portfolio and ultimately building an empire. That's what our community is doing. They're all building this, doing this fast fire, you know, getting to financial freedom with an empire of real estate and being able to contribute. We think of it as be more, do more, give more. That's what it's about in our community.
Great. Hey, I want to thank you for taking the time to be here with us. And if people want to reach out to you, just go onto the website. It's the best way to do it.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a support at semiretiredmd.com email in there, and we're happy to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks, guys, and enjoy your trip to Disneyland.
Thank you, Clint. This was really amazing to be here with you.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.